Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at ikea-usa.com/circular. Visit ikea-usa.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
This podcast contains information, theories, and speculation based on the A Song of Ice and Fire books by George R.R. Martin. It can and will spoil future episodes of the HBO television series Game of Thrones. This is your one and only spoiler warning. If you're looking for our non-spoiler podcast on Game of Thrones, please look at our feed archive for Sunday night and Tuesday afternoon releases, or visit baldmove.com for our entire catalog. Hey everybody, welcome to the Game of Thrones podcast, spoiler edition, brought to you by Bald Move. You can, of course, find everything that we do on baldmove.com. I'm your host, Aaron, and joining me for the first time on the spoiler edition is...
It's Jim. I don't know what to feel about this, because I've never listened to a single one of your spoiler casts, for obvious reasons.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like even if I did, it would not prepare me for this new and, you know, whatever, improved, maybe, version.
So earlier today, I sat you down and I showed you three videos by Alt-Shift-X to kind of peel back some of the most crucial theories I think you need to join the spoiler participation in the early goings of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Namely, they were R plus L equals J.
Mm-hmm.
It was the Gravedigger theory. And it was Jon Snow really dead? Those videos. I'll link those in the show notes.
And also Daenerys, can she be burned?
Dragons, oh, yes.
Fire
that's
thing.
That's
yeah.
A bonus one. I want to get that in a minute. We actually filmed, this is a kind of a popular porno move. We filmed his Jim's defloweration.
Okay.
As he got a spoiler cherry right. popped. And we actually posted this. It's already up on the website. Just went up by the time you're hearing this on baldmove.com. It's a club member exclusive, so you're going to have to pay a buck or two to see it. But I show him the videos, and then we get his instant reaction and kind of discussion about how it changes his opinion. But definitely encourage people to check that out. But I wanted to know, has your opinion of John coming back changed? Because you were definitely, no way John's coming back.
Right, and I think I explained at the end of that video kind of why I'm no way John is coming back. It's basically because I'm stubborn.
Yeah,
and I don't know. So I talked about it also. The generalities of this seem to make a lot of sense. Like, you know, Melisandre could potentially bring people back from the dead, being, you know, worshiping her blood god or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
We know that those people have the power to do that, even if maybe not. We haven't seen Melisandre do it yet.
Mm-hmm.
So like these ideas are kind of floating around the universe.
The mechanics
makes a lot
are
of
in
sense.
Place.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense to bring those things to Jon Snow at this particular moment.
Right on.
Given that we have, and in episode one, and this is spoiler town, I can talk about it all I want, it's called The Red Woman. So unless there's another Red Woman hanging around Westeros, which there probably is.
Sans got somewhere. Red hair.
Right. Okay. But the Red Woman certainly could be attributed to Melisandre herself. So it could be an important episode for her. Given the timing of it, I think it's significant.
One thing you ask in your defloweration video that I didn't have a ready answer to is how much of this is actually on screen.
Right.
And yeah. I'm like, I know that there was definitely hints and winks to the viewer, and I wasn't aware of how much, because Dan from Australia sent me a video that is a supercut of like all the hints to the R plus L equals J theory over all the seasons.
Oh, right.
And there
that
was like
theory,
eight
yeah.
minutes of stuff that... I mean, do you agree that now that you know there was a lot, especially the scene with Littlefinger in the crypt talking about the tourney at Harrenhal, like he almost looks right at the camera and goes, wink.
Yeah. So Littlefinger's reaction in like put into context with this particular theory
yeah.
is interesting, because Sansa's like, oh, she was kidnapped and raped by Rhaegar, and like that's one way of looking at it.
Yeah,
and you can see the look on Littlefinger's face going, well, I'm going to let you believe that.
Which is kind of a... I know we had a ball talking about this in the spoiler cast last year, but that's kind of a bombshell, because it implies that maybe Littlefinger knows that information somehow, which I guess I would buy.
Which colors my opinion of what he's actually trying to do in the North.
Would that also imply that Varys knows that? Because I feel like it's hard for me to believe that... Well, I mean, that's not true. Varys doesn't know everything that Littlefinger's doing and vice versa. But as far as their working knowledge of what's going on in the world and what has occurred in the world 20, 30 years ago, I feel like both of them probably have 95% of the same info.
Yeah, I would assume so. And it makes me wonder, like, you know, is maybe Littlefinger after some control of Jon Snow or to become a player in Jon Snow's game before Jon Snow even knows there's a game to be played.
Get all enmeshed in the
Starks. He's up in the North. He's hanging out with Starks. He's doing his thing kind of off the radar.
Because if he goes and says to Jon, like, look, I've been looking after Starks, and I'm the only one who's been looking for your guys' best interest this whole time.
And he can prove it.
Who is alive that can contradict him?
And there are people alive who can directly support that.
It's
like
his sister, Sansa.
Exactly.
I don't necessarily agree with his methods, and I don't know about this Ramsay Snow business, but... I was definitely a goner in King's Landing, and he got me out of there, and he got me out of the situation with Tyrion. And
it also feels a lot more like a Littlefinger plot in the show to have him, you know, go to Cersei and say, I want to become Warden of the North, I want to do all these things, and kind of lay all of his plans out on the table when those, in fact, really aren't his entire plan.
It also has a nice symmetry with Littlefinger rope-a-doping Jon Snow in the same way that he did his father/uncle.
Okay.
You know, that he kind of draw him in and convinced him to support, and I'm assuming he'll try to stab him in the back. Although, Jon Snow comes back after being stabbed in the back, like, I don't know, he's going to have his head on a swivel, right?
I would think so.
Yeah, I don't know.
This event will probably change Jon Snow in many ways.
There will be a moment where Littlefinger's gambits fail him, unless, again, that's the question I always ask, what is Martin playing at? If this is a bad ending, then perhaps, you know, Peter Baelish sits the Iron Throne at the end of all this.
Right.
With all the good people in Westeros at his feet. I don't know, but...
Is that a good ending? Is that a bad ending?
Well, I mean, I'm not saying objectively, qualitatively. I'm saying good versus evil.
Okay.
Like, Littlefinger... And that's the other thing. Like, is...
I don't know what Littlefinger is.
Littlefinger on the... Yes, he was a shitbag getting to it, but he could probably be an effective leader if he wanted to be.
There are certainly people I consider evil in this show. Yeah. Some of the Lannisters, namely. I don't know that I qualify Littlefinger as that.
He's ruthless.
He is. He's cutthroat, but...
Stannis is kind of ruthless in his own way, too.
Sure.
I don't think he's evil. So, yeah, there's definitely shades of gray in the show.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
House of the Dragon Season 2 is coming up sooner than you think. And to get us all back in that Leal state of mind, Aaron and I have teamed up with Maester Anthony to bring you coordinated coverage, new and old. For the next 10 weeks leading up to Season 2, Maester Anthony will be releasing an episode of his Season 1 coverage on the Hot D podcast. He originally recorded and released it exclusively on his Double Dragon podcast, so while it's retro coverage, it's almost certainly new to you.
In addition, each Friday, Jim and I will be reading the relevant sections of George Martin's Targaryen history book, Fire and Blood, so that we can compare and contrast it to that week's episode of Hot D Season 1. So grab a copy of Fire and Blood and read along with us if you're so inclined. Just don't read ahead, unless you enjoy spoilers.
If that's not enough to satisfy your craving for fantasy entertainment, well, you're in luck. We recently watched King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, which is Guy Ritchie's uniquely stylish and anachronistic riff on the King Arthur legend. Yes, Guy Ritchie took on the most famous of all English legends and did it with huge ambitions. Sadly, or perhaps thankfully, depending on your tastes, his ambitions were cut short by meager audience interest. Join us for the podcast this Tuesday as we discuss why that might have been and whether this retelling is any good.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Right.
One thing I want to talk about before we got into anything else is Davey Mack started a thread on the forum section saying it's all great that you're bringing Jim into the fold and that you're, you know, maybe saying that, hey, show watchers only might get into. But he pointed out there was quite a few plot lines that are still from a feast or a dance that I thought that they're just going to skip some of them more minor, but I want to kind of review them. So if there are any show watchers that might want to nope out when we start, and it's like, oh God, I didn't know there's this many topics left. So they did a collaborative list. Davey Matt came up with, there's an epilogue of Dance with Dragons with Varys returning to King's Landing and doing some surprising things. So do you want me to be a little bit protect you from some of these spoilers, or should we just discuss it? Because some of this stuff is going to be a naked statement of fact that I don't know.
I think we should probably discuss it. Now, I don't know, after seeing like some of the theory videos, mm-hmm. I don't know that show watchers only have any business in this section at all.
Okay.
Because I was shocked at how little of the theorizing came from the show.
Yeah.
And how much of it is from the books. I mean,
there's definitely the bones of it in the show, but there's going to be more things
to come. But so subtle,
yeah.
if they're there at all. I mean, the stuff with the Hound is like all spoilers, like hardcore spoilers
that's
from
this
the
season,
book.
That will presumably happen this season.
That will spoil part of the show, right? So like if you're a show watcher, I might have misspoken before I saw these theories.
Uh-huh.
You might want to stay out of this. Well, but I think here we should just go for it.
Okay.
Like, don't worry about my spoiler.
All right. So Varys comes back to King Lannister. Kevin Lannister comes back after Cersei's disastrous reign.
Okay. Where was he sent? He was sent to some island.
It just happens differently. But he returned to Lannisport and says, fuck
okay.
you.
Right.
And you can run this into the ground. Mm-hmm. And she does. And in the books, he comes back and kind of starts riding the ship because Kevin, maybe he's not as good as his brother, but he's not a fool.
Yeah.
He's got a good head and a shoulder. He starts riding the ship that is the state. And Varys pops out of the shadows and says, can't have this, and shoots him with a crossbow.
What?
Murders him right in his own chambers.
Another crossbow killing in the chambers? Is
yep.
it in the shitter?
Not in the night chamber. It's just okay. in his private chambers.
A lot of crossbowing. I mean, really, there are only a certain selection of weapons in this world. So
I think this actually will work well with the film, because right now Varys is there with Tyrion.
Does he blame it on Tyrion?
No, because this is like
a
cliffhanger in the books.
Okay.
It's like, oh, what's going to happen now? But I think it's interesting to have Tyrion and Varys working hand in hand. It'll be interesting to see if they can see over the narrow sea. They're seeing kind of Westeros get back into ship shape, and if that's something they plan to do together, because, you know, Tyrion's hate of his family extend to his uncle. I don't think there's any animosity there, but it's like,
I don't
well,
think so, no.
We can't have them make Westeros great again if we're going to want to bring Dany across as the rightful ruler. So is Tyrion in on that intrigue? Are they going to actually continue that plot line? Will, you know, it's another tidy way is like Cersei murders Kevin because she wants the power.
Sure.
And she's got Robert Strong, and I don't know.
I mean, Kevin's nowhere to be found at the moment, so this will all have to happen.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if he was when Cersei was being welcomed back into the Red Keep after her humiliation.
Oh,
if he was
in
the
scene?
Lineup of that.
I don't recall seeing him, but it doesn't mean he wasn't there.
Because I remember in the books, for sure, he sees this as kind of like she's a pitiful creature at this point, and he wants to roll up his sleeves and get to work.
Yeah.
Lady Stoneheart, that's one that I was kind of like teasing you in the video, that not being sure if you're ready for that jelly.
Yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about.
So Lady Stoneheart is a shadowy figure you hear about, that she's taken over Beric Dondarrion's crew with the Thoros of Myr, the Brotherhood Without Banners.
Oh, God. You just said, like, 15 names I don't recognize.
You do. Beric Dondarrion, he's the Lord of Light. He's the one that gets resurrected, and he fights the Hound.
Okay,
the
yes.
Hound kills him. And
right.
They've got this little, like, almost Robin Hood band, where they're just looking after the little guys.
Okay.
Trying to right wrongs as best they can. This character called Lady Stoneheart, and you hear from, like, not apocryphal, word on the street is that she is running it a lot more ruthlessly. And is hunting Boltons and Lannisters.
So she's become the head of this?
Yes.
Beric Dondarrion organization?
The Brotherhood Without Banners.
Okay. Okay,
so
I think I'm straight on that.
You find out eventually that 3 days after Catelyn Stark is murdered and thrown into the river, they find her bloated body on the side of the river, and Barrick is moved. This is like on his seventh resurrection. He's moved to, I can't remember how it goes down, but essentially he transfers his life force to her.
Catelyn's back.
And she's resurrected as a very disgusting, waterlogged zombie version of Kat.
That's amazing.
She can't talk because her throat's slit, and she just kind of hisses. And but
oh god,
yeah. And she's running these kangaroo trials.
I hope they put that on screen.
It's kind of amazing. And she eventually Brienne crosses her path, and she is pissed with Brienne because she did not bring back any of her daughters. And she's and also guess what? Brienne's carrying Jaime Lannister's fucking lion sword.
Right.
And this right. looks very suspicious to Kat, and sure. there's a cliffhanger in the books where she's hanging Brienne for treason to her. And
like, where does it end? Like, is
as
she...
Brienne's losing consciousness.
And oh, she says, wow, that far in.
Because Lady Stoneheart gives her a command that you can choose the rope or the sword. Like, you can be hung as a traitor, or you can vow to go kill Jaime Lannister.
Trouble is they didn't realize just how tall she is, and her feet wouldn't
she's
dangle.
Like, I'm
just,
still, I can touch.
Guys,
I can
this,
touch.
See this? I can get a hand through the rope. It doesn't...
But it ends as Brienne's being hung. She gasps out She gasps out a word, but Martin doesn't reveal what the word is.
Ghost.
Well, sure. but that would be, you know, that's kind of what I was alluding to yesterday in the earlier discussion we had on the spoiler video, is that there's a little bit of an excess of people being brought back to life. You got the Mountain, you got Catelyn, you got Barrick, you got Jon Snow, presumably. You know, where is this going to stop? Because if everyone gets brought back to life, then what the fuck are we doing?
Where's Ned? Let's get Ned back up in this show.
We got Ned's bones around somewhere.
Right.
Have him get some Jason and the Argonauts action. Anyway, Arya getting her sight back, which he admits is kind of an easy thing to guess, but, you know, I guess she could be a Daredevil-type figure. Eliza from L.A. mentions the Cold Hands or Bingen theory, and I talked to you yesterday about this Cold Hands figure. Who's
terrible
this,
name, but yes.
He's this white, W-I-G-H-T, the one, the undead corpse-type figures that leads, in the books, he's the one that leads Bran to the One-Eyed Crow up
right,
in the tree.
Right, he's possessed by... The spirit of some dude.
No one really... So there's some theories that like this Cold Hands is actually Bingen, because Bingen is kind of a mystery in the books. He's the first ranger of the Watch. He's Ned's brother, Jon Snow's uncle, and he goes up north on a ranging and he dies. And that's the thing that motivates the Old Bear to take the whole ranger force out and force to go try to find him and figure out what the fuck is going on up north. I don't know why people expect him to come back into the story, but there's so many theories that you're going to laugh. There's theories that Bingen is actually Dario Nyquilis.
Oh my god.
There's theories that Bingen is this other character we're going to meet this season, who's one of the Greyjoys. There's theories that he's actually Coldhands. And she's mentioning that there is some speculation that Coldhands and or Bingen is shown in this season's trailer. I've seen that footage. I'm not convinced, and I don't think Cold Hands is Bingen. I don't think Cold Hands has any part to play in the story at this point. That's kind of just you know. I think in the books, it was introduced to. Because I'm personally of the my fan inside me wants to see Jon Snow animate as a white, and then somehow to warg into that zombie body. Because I think that'd be cool to then, because the problem with the white is you don't have a brain, and much the same way that, you know, Cold Hands was existing as an independent intelligence, or maybe he was being puppeted by the One-Eyed Crow, that would be cool for John to essentially be steering a meat puppet version of his own body.
Yeah.
And creepy. And
hell yeah.
He can still be kind of heroic. It also gets away, you know, with what Barrick told us about every time he comes back, he's slightly less of himself. Well, John, if he wargs in to, say, Ghost... temporarily, his body returns to life and he wargs back into it. Potentially, he could be 100%. I don't know. The Hound lives. This is the Gravedigger theory. That's something that is almost certainly because Ian McShane was cast as Septon Maribald, who's a big figure in this whole reveal that maybe the Hound is not quite dead. With the ensuing, you know, Gregor Bowl, the Clegane Bowl, rather. Yep. Olivia D. mentions the Lady Stoneheart again. G. from Pasadena mentions Quentin Martell. So this is interesting.
Who the fuck is that?
in the books, Doran, the Prince Bashir of, mm-hmm. of Doran, he actually has this marriage pact that he entered a long time ago with the person who is the guardian of Dany and her brother, that he was going to marry his eldest son to her, and that he'd have a secret alliance with the Targaryens to return them to power at the proper time. So his son, the prince, would become king, and Dany would be his queen. His son is Quentin, and he's sent over to treat with Dany in Dances with Dragons, or maybe it's Feast. Like the books are kind of one unit. And she rejects him, because at this time she's already married Hizdahr.
Okay.
The Lorak.
Mm-hmm.
And when she disappears, he gets into his mind that he's going to go tame the dragons himself. And he goes down to, you know, assert his dominance over them, and they burn him up.
That makes sense.
And that's where it ends for his part.
Okay.
Now, what I'm scared is there's a prominent scene in the trailers of Tyrion going down to the crypts to visit the dragons. And,
yep.
it's edited in such a way that they're suggesting that these dragons are going to try to roast him.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'd be pretty pissed off if they just made Tyrion into Quentin and he gets burned up for a case of hubris.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want Tyrion to go out that way.
I feel like Tyrion, you know, he's either going to be damn sure of his dragon knowledge before he goes down there, or he's just not going to go down there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure what to make of that, but that's the other big kind of plot line from the books. And then the whole thing with the, you know, we talked about the whole thing with the Greyjoys, the fact that in the books, Papa Greyjoy dies off pretty quickly, and then there's this big thing called the King's Moot where the Iron Islanders try to elect their newest king, and they have this whole like almost like a contested convention where everyone goes and they put their best claim forward, and he's got a brother Victarion, which is this big famous warrior, and he's this very fierce guy. A very respected warrior. He's got another brother, Euron, which is almost like a pirate guy. And then he's got his daughter throws her hat into the ring and says, mm-hmm. I want to be your queen. And they elect Euron on the strength of him having this crazy dragon horn that he claims can control dragons that he found from his sailing in the, you know, the Undying Lands where the...
Valyrian.
Yeah, the old Valyria. So...
Huh.
He then sends his brother Victarion on a mission to make a marriage proposal to Dany. So, like, Dany has
She's
no shortage
of
suitors
yeah.
at the point. Yeah. So, that I think that's pretty much all the dangling plot line. So, as you can see, there's a fair amount of stuff that still needs to be addressed. I was surprised because I thought they were just going to eliminate the Iron Islanders, which I thought means that was just a red herring in the books. That's, you know, just to mm-hmm. distract you from what Martin really was wanting to do with Dany. But
right.
Now it seems like maybe that's pivotal.
Okay. What?
Which means, though I don't like the Greyjoys and I don't like their plot lines, which means I have to entertain all plots and theories involving them going forward. So I shut
so
that shit
out.
Down last year because I'm like, there's no fucking way they're going to do the King's Moot. There's no it's no,
never too late.
It's essentially the Council of Elrond, only dumber. It's no way they're going to bring it back, but apparently they're going to bring it back.
Talk to me about Theon.
Okay.
Because I saw Theon in the previews.
Sure.
So I've seen still shots of Theon and Sansa crossing a river. So I guess they jump into the moat around Winterfell. They can't reach the moat from the wall, can they?
I don't know.
I mean, come on.
They jump
in
the snowbank, and as far as I'm concerned...
But I've seen them crossing a river, so I don't know. Bad idea in the cold Winterfell region, but whatever. Then I saw Theon getting a hug from Marjorie.
Really?
I swear to God that's in the trailer.
Okay.
I have no fucking clue how that's going to happen. Because I don't want to see Sansa go back to King's Landing. And it looks like she's still in her cell where the sparrows put her. So...
No, see, I think you saw Marjorie hugging her brother. Who, from the back, looks a lot like... You know, they got the same curly hair.
Maybe. But, I mean, it's a cut directly from Theon to that scene. He's wearing the same type of, like, tattered clothing.
Yeah, I think they're just the editors fucking with you,
man.
Because I can't imagine...
Right.
I can't imagine the South and the North plots crossing that much.
That's what I was thinking.
Okay.
Like, how the hell is this going to happen? So maybe it is her hugging him, but man, their cloaks look torn in the exact same ways. And
well, that would make sense because Theon's been living as Reek, and also
right, he's essentially been living as a prisoner for all this time.
Yeah, what was his name? Marjorie's brother,
Loras.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, Loras, and he's been wasting away in the dungeons of the Faith of the Seven, the
right.
Sparrows. So
yeah.
It would. I think that they're just fucking with you on the editing there.
Okay, could be.
But yeah, the other thing about interesting about Theon is Theon is by blood and right, he is actually the king.
Right.
Now, he doesn't have penis nor testicles,
uh-huh.
We think.
Might be a complication.
He's missing one or both.
The king, he still has a right to be king, he's just not
going to
preserve the lineage.
Exactly. And,
right.
And I think that would and also the Iron Islanders are not exactly an enlightened strain of folk.
Sure.
I think you not having balls.
Yeah.
Although his sister made a pretty strong claim that no one was like rejecting because she's a badass in her own right,
mm-hmm.
but she could mother children, whereas
that's
he's
true.
Just like,
yeah.
I think the Iron Islanders would be like, hey man, you can't, you're just postponing the King's Moot another 15, 20 years.
Right.
Get the fuck out of here. Nobody likes you anyway. Your own father didn't like you.
But he has a right.
You're half wolf. Yeah, no, he's got the
right. He can scream, it's my right.
I just don't know if the Iron Islanders give a shit.
Right.
So,
sure.
But I think it's interesting that in the books, Yara or whatever her name, because I can't remember what's her name in the books, because they changed her name from the books to the show.
Who?
Say
the show
sister.
Name.
I don't. It's Yara. I don't
Yara?
Know. I don't think that's
okay.
Her name in the show. I think they changed it.
I'm
or maybe,
not sure.
Maybe it was something.
I only know what she looks like. I have no idea what her name is.
Okay. Anyway, in the books, she never finds out about Theon, or never definitely doesn't meet. And I wonder if they had her try to rescue him and hurt him, shrink away from her as a way for her to justify in her mind why she can go ahead and
yeah.
do this King's Moot and throw her hat in a ring for the crown.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I would think she would fight for her brother to be like, well, he's the king in exile or the king in prison. We need to go rescue him.
Right.
Okay. Now we're caught up to speed. I want to move on to Matt S., who shared with me a theory that's backed up with a YouTube video about whether Game of Thrones is, in fact, not in like some kind of past or not in an alternate Earth, but it's actually a post-apocalyptic Earth.
Okay. So future Earth.
Now, this is a very hoary science fiction fantasy trope. You've got Planet of the Apes. You got Fred Saberhagen's, swords. The idea that there's a nuclear war that bombs us back in a Stone Age, and then we reemerge thousands of years later at a medieval, and oh my God, it's not the past, it's the future.
Right. Battlestar Galactica.
There you go. I don't think so. I feel like Martin... That would be too tropey for him, because I feel like he's trying to write a science fiction fantasy series and break all the tropes.
Yeah, I personally would hate that.
I would groan so loud.
The rules of this world are apparently completely broken in George Martin's rules.
Well, that's the thing. That's usually an element of it, is that the apocalypse made a profound change to the way the Earth works.
Oh, how?
Well,
how did it make a change to the way that physics, as we understand it, works?
Well, like in the Saberhagen series, there was a supercomputer that was like the Earth's defense network, and mm-hmm. it actually, in kind of a way like the Metamorphosis of Prime Intellect, as a last-ditch effort to save humanity, did this change, and it like rewrote the rules of physics and whatnot, and as a result, mankind was reduced to like a... Bronze Age existence.
Okay.
And now nuclear radiation was turned into demons.
I feel like that's a layer the show doesn't need.
No,
shouldn't have.
I'm entirely...
This would kill my enjoyment of the series.
This would be a very... It'd be kind of like realizing that the whole series took place in the dream
snow
of
globe.
An autistic boy that had a snow globe.
Right.
Like, nobody wants that shit.
No.
So... The theory might be internally consistent, but I'm not a big fan, Matt. Fern from New York City said, based on the trailers, it looks like we're going to see some Tower of Joy action in a flashback. Everyone has heard at this point of R plus L equals J, but I recently heard the theory that R plus L equals J and M. This theory submits that Ned's sister had twins at the Tower, and Ned and Howland Reed discovered that they split the kids up Star Wars style, and Ned takes John, and Howland Reed takes Mira. which is the brother of Jojen, who is now chilling up with Bran up in the hollowed out tree with Saruman the Dingy.
Wait, the sister of Jojen?
Yes.
Okay.
Mira. In the show, Mira, I believe, is around John's age and looks more like John than Jojen Reed. Your thoughts? I instinctively don't like any theory that tries to put a spin on R plus L equals J.
Okay.
Because even if you can find some problems with that theory, or even if you find support for others, the overwhelming evidence points to the John thing. If you want to, and what would it mean if Mira is his sister?
And they've
like what new possibilities would that actually add to the plot that wouldn't further complicate it or dilute the whole Song of Ice and Fire?
I just can't imagine. Like, if they want to do that on the show, they've already fucked it up because that girl's too young. There's no way in hell that girl's a twin with...
You don't think so? Because I think she could roughly be... Yeah, I think she plays
I think she's
younger.
Bran's age, and Bran looks much younger than
I think
John
she's
Snow.
Older than Bran.
You think so?
Yeah, I think she's like... I feel like... Well, it's hard to tell because Bran's grown up. But
right, right.
I feel like that she's roughly 2 years or so older, her and Jojen both.
Okay. Jon Snow is what, 8 years older than Bran? Like some...
The thing is, the ages of these kids are all fucked up because the timeline is this weird kind of like it's adhering into the details of the book, but in the book everything's condensed much further. You got
right, but I can look at Bran and I can look at her and I can say they're about the same age, and then I can look at Bran and Jon Snow together in Winterfell and I can say they're nowhere near the same age.
Because that's the thing, like Bran's supposed to be like 8. But in the show, he's looking like he's a teenager, like an 18, 19-year-old. Right. John was supposed to be 16 or maybe even 15. And in the show, he always was like playing like an 18, 19-year-old.
Right. So that's what I mean. Like, if they wanted to go that direction, they fucked it up.
But I don't think 5 years of real showtime has passed. You have to kind of imagine.
And just in casting alone.
Yeah, the Arya is no longer an 8-year-old girl, clearly. Right. But obviously. I think you're supposed to understand that she is young still.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's one of the things that it's tough when you cast these child actors, and they've all been excellent. Like they really knocked it out of the park with all these young child actors, but they grew up and I guess they decided that recasting them would not be an option because they are just visibly aging out of the roles and there's not much you can do about it.
Right.
You know, they had the same thing with Walking Dead and Chandler Riggs.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain. Featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, a very special isn't your speed. We've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
Okay, Tyler S. has a bunch of kind of recaps and thoughts for how he thinks things are going to go down this year. You know, Sans and Theon jump off of Winterfell's walls. They obviously survive. In the books, they join Stannis' camp, which is no longer an option because, in his opinion, Stannis is definitely dead. That's something we should talk on.
Okay.
Is Stannis dead or not?
Because I'm sticking with the theory. Yeah, he's dead.
He tells Brienne to do her duty, mm-hmm. and then the camera cuts away.
As she raises her sword,
as she raises her sword, but it's not like this show to shy away from showing somebody getting his head cut off.
Right.
I still am a 50-50 whether he's alive or dead, because I think it's somewhat interesting for Brienne to somehow redeem Stannis.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I'm on board with the other way, 50-50.
Okay. Well, you're in good company with Tyler here. My best guess is Littlefinger will return with an army from the Vale. Sansa and Theon will team up with him to take down the Boltons. I predict Sansa will be the one to kill Ramsay, with perhaps an assist from Theon, since he also deserves a little poetic justice. Sansa will then unite the North around her, and maybe we can get a second Red Wedding in to take care of the Freys.
Okay.
That's a pretty good theory. I think Sansa could certainly unite the North around her.
Right. The North remembers.
There's also an idea that Sansa might take the place of Lady Stoneheart. Like, because she's got reason to be pissed at Brienne.
Please, no. I want zombie Catelyn. I really want to see that.
But in something I came up with last year is this term, Martin's Razor. Like, if you take all the characters in the books and you try to, like, what are they all doing? Is there any way we can take two or three characters and splice them into one?
Uh-huh.
Like, narrative economy would say that Sansa has a motive to be pissed at Brienne. She's got a motive to hate the Lannisters. Mm-hmm. She could easily step in and take the essential role, which is to give Brienne this dilemma of whether she fulfills her oath to Catelyn Stark or betrays her now dear friend Jaime Lannister, who she has learned to respect and see he's a much more complicated figure.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's I go back and forth about that.
The other thing... talking about the North now and what may or may not take place up there is in the preview, I can see that it looks like, I think his name's Tormund, the red haired wildling
guy. Yeah, the giant.
Yeah. He's kind of leading the wildlings down south, and he comes across the Bolton army.
Sharp
eye.
You can
see the flayed man's shields and
banners. Yep.
So apparently there's going to be a big battle there. Although it looks like the wildlings are kind of surrounded and surprised and might be getting fucked.
Yeah.
But I don't know where, you know, Stannis' army would factor into that, or Sansa's army if she has one.
Yep.
But it seems like the wildlings are going to make their way south.
Yeah, so that's another kind of Occam's Razor clusterfuck situation, because in the books, the Battle of Winterfell hasn't happened yet. Stannis' army has not reached.
Oh, wow.
They're still mired in the increasing depth of snow.
So Stannis is still alive?
Stannis is still alive, and he's leading. It's essentially right before Shireen got burnt in the TV show.
Wow.
He's stuck, and he's snowed in, and he's got this force, but he can't. It's winter's coming, and it's increasingly hard to get down. You also have Jon trying to lead an army of wildlings down to reinforce him, because Ramsay Bolton sends a letter to goad him into doing it, essentially.
Okay.
Although that's another, I did a whole theory about who actually wrote the letter that claims to be Ramsay Bolton.
Right. Might be Littlefinger.
Who knows? But you'd have to go back and listen to that podcast. By the way, all of the archives, show notes for the spoiler section, I have a link that has all the topics I've discussed and the time stamp. If you want to jump right to like the pink letter theory, you find the podcast that covers it, and it's got the time stamp in the podcast. You can just go on the website, find it, and listen to that. But yeah, obviously John gets killed because the Black brothers are horrified that he's going to take part in, you know, south of the wall politics. Which was more of the motivation for why he gets killed. It's a lot of things, but that was the straw that broke the camel's back. You're really going to lead a force of the brothers and the wildlings and weaken the wall in this particular time to satisfy a personal vengeance?
I feel like they didn't make that super clear in the show.
They didn't. Well, and I don't think they have to, because the important thing is John gets right. killed because the Black Brothers feel betrayed by him.
Right. It's still wrapped up in the Wildlings, and they're not happy about that, and I understood it, but...
But I can kind of see them, like, Tormund deciding to go do this for... Because he likes Jon Snow, and he wants vengeance for him, and yeah. he doesn't trust the Black Brothers anymore, or maybe they feel like they need to conquer to make a space. I don't know, but there's these two armies, you know. Obviously Stannis has been destroyed, but you still got the Wildlings and they got the thing, the trailer. I don't
yeah.
know.
And it makes me wonder if Littlefinger knows exactly what's going on up at the wall with these Wildlings and stuff, and if he's yeah. going to be maybe as surprised as, you know, the Boltons might be by this army coming down.
That Littlefinger, he's an interesting guy. And again, his plan in the books and his plan in the show is not the same. They've changed that probably because they know where he's eventually going. Whereas in the book, everything is a lot more circuitous.
Right.
So he continues, Tyler does, as far as Jon's resurrection, here's my best prediction. The show will fake us out by having Melisandre attempt to bring Jon back and fail. At some point, Davos will confront Melisandre about the death of Shireen. He may even attempt to kill her. While they are fighting, Jon will come back as a white and kill Melisandre. Davos will fight him off for a little bit, and right before Jon goes in for the killing blow, he'll warg back into his own body. He presumes, I think, that he's warging into Ghost first.
Okay.
The show would definitely have to set up the idea of warging again, and since that's been a full season since we saw Bran, they could also even set up the idea that all Starks can warg by giving Arya some wolf dreams or something. We talked about this in the bonus thing that we recorded.
She does have the eyes for it.
There's a lot of way... Yeah. There's a lot of ways that they can introduce this cinematically and not, you know, like when you hear this thing about, like you gave resistance to the idea that all Starks are wargs.
Because I just don't feel like I've seen it on screen.
You know, Bran started warging when he was crippled and near death. Mm-hmm. I think it's a very easy way to be like, well, Arya's blinded and she's got this moment of stress, so now she's got warg powers.
Sure.
And Jon is now dead and dying in the snow. He's got warg powers because that stuff is like... Was it a cheat when Bran could do it? Because if you accepted that, I feel like that's exact same circumstances.
Sure, yeah. And I think it's smarter, actually, to let Arya now with this... Like, instead of jumping straight to Jon Snow, it would impress upon me, look, it's not just Bran who's special, it's all of these kids.
And with the right stresses or circumstances or robbing them of a sight or ability, it allows them to, you know, open up their third eye or whatever the fuck it is. And starts.
Now, wouldn't theoretically Jon be the weakest warg of them all, since he's only really a Stark half-blood?
Well, that's true of all the children.
Theoretically.
Because, you know, Catelyn was not a Stark either. She was a Tully. She got married. So they're all...
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
They're not Targaryens or Lannisters.
They're not Lannisters. Yeah, they're not fucking each other.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Good point. Never mind.
So it's the Stark blood. But he also likes... Bran's story arc mirroring Arya's, because he thinks Arya will learn to shed her identity while Bran learns to embrace his. Arya will learn about death while Bran learns about life. The Tower of Joy flashback could be told as a flashback, as he says, but it also could be revealed through Bran's visions as he explores the Weirwood Net. So that's much of what we're going to see Bran do if it goes along the books, is he's going to learn how to use these weirwoods to both see the past, see and lend to the future, and also any, like, he's aware of anything that happens around the Weirwoods.
Yeah.
Fun fact, like, every major keep in the kingdoms has a Weirwood grove as a respect to the old gods. Some of them are cut down. They still have, like, but, you know, it's there was a time when they covered the entire land, so they know a lot, and there's a lot of, like, it kind of reminds me of the whole... Did you ever see Avatar, the James Cameron deal?
No.
Well, fuck. Because I was going to make this analogy about the Na'vi's trees and how they kind of retain the archival knowledge of their people somehow. I feel like there's a lot of that with the Children of the Forest and the Starks and the people that worship the old gods, that it wouldn't surprise me. Because we last heard Ned talk to Jon. He says, when I see you again, I'll tell you about your mother. It wouldn't surprise me at all if some ghost version of Ned communes with Jon while they're both dead through some kind of warging weirwood thing.
Okay.
Yeah, you're breaking out to a cold sweat, I can see.
Too much fantasy. Can't handle.
We'll see. Back in season 3, he's talking about Rickon. Rickon and Asha split off from Bran's group before they reached the wall. He sent them to live with the Umbers. who, if you'll remember, the great John Umbert got his fingers bitten off by John's wolf before supporting him. Or not okay. John, sorry, Rob's wolf before supporting him as the King of the North. But he says that he thinks that John, he could see John sending Davos off to look for Rickon. This could lead to some of the stuff with Lord Manderly, but I think he will find Rickon and Asha and Greywater Watch with Howland Reed. Perhaps Mira will decide to head south and meet up with him somehow. I don't know about that last part, but Howland Reed is Mira and Jojen's father. He's also the only living person who could testify if R plus L equals J is true, that John is indeed the true born son of Rhaegar and Lyanna. It's interesting if he's actually in Greywater Watch, because that would be a good way to put all that stuff together. That's Greywater Watch is the keep of Howland Reed. That's where he lives.
Okay. Where roughly where
it's
is
in,
that on
it's
the map?
It's south of the north. It's like that's the neck where kind of Westeros figure eights and it goes skinny. There's like a whole swampy region, which is right. why the north is very hard to conquer.
Like that.
And Howland Reed kind of rules over that swampy Dagobah type terrain.
Okay.
And he
so
protects.
It's somewhere in there.
Yeah. But yeah, the Lord Manderly, I'm going to let that settle because I'm already blowing Jim's mind enough. But yeah, no,
so
I think
theories.
I honestly would not mind seeing the Manderlys transformed into the Umbers and, you know, given one of the Umbers, the Lord Manderlys, the North Remember speech.
Who's the Manderlys?
Yeah, I don't think they've been introduced yet. They're okay. One of Ned's loyal supporters.
All right. So they would be quoting the North Remembers, that
yeah.
type of shit.
And then so there's this plot established in the book where there's this northern conspiracy where all the northern lords are secretly conspiring because they all love the Starks.
Right.
And they're secretly conspiring to overthrow the Boltons and return the Starks to some form of prominence. The mm-hmm. problem is no one's got a Stark.
Right. They're all kind of cast to the wind right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah. But there's that's where the conspiracy comes in. There's just a lot of theories that somebody knows that Jon... because in the books, there's this plot where Robb Stark insists on leaving a will behind that legitimizes Jon and names him as the successor, as the regent until Bran or Rickon come of age.
That doesn't happen, though?
Well, that document gets lost.
Okay.
But
I feel like all of this shit is falling into Littlefinger's pockets. Like, he had a Stark. I'm sure he has this will. Like,
Yeah.
So if that's the case... Does Littlefinger know about this conspiracy? And if so, why didn't he use Sansa as a pawn instead of placing her in the belly of the beast?
I don't think... this is the one thing I don't think Littlefinger would know and suspect.
Really? A giant northern conspiracy?
Because this is very insular, and it's very about Ned and the Starks, okay. and he would be... Like, I don't know what...
Even though he knew Catelyn well, that sort of thing?
No, I don't think they trust... This is a northern business only kind of thing.
Okay.
But I could be wrong, because Littlefinger's pretty good. Kevin F. wants to say, this season's obviously making book readers ask themselves, will they watch or not? Well, to me, the show has gone its own path in so many areas already. I just get a feeling that it's going to keep doing its own thing. The Double D's know an outline of an ending, and I think that they'll forge their own path down that road. And when Winds of Winter and A Dream of Spring come out, I have a feeling the show just won't spoil the majority of the books. For one thing, neither books are finished. George can change his mind about anything at any time. So for me, I feel safe that I'm going to get two different experiences by the time it's all said and done. What do you guys think? I got a lot to say about this.
Okay.
How does it strike you as a primarily show first fan to hear this concept of George changing how the books end based on... reaction to the show? Does that seem
frankly,
like dirty pool?
No, I mean, I don't care because I'm not going to go read 500,000 pages worth of books after I've seen the show. I can see where book readers might... Well, I don't know. Some show watchers might get mad about it.
What happens if the Double D's insist that they had the true ending and George like, nope, you just fucked it up. My ending's the good one.
I don't know how the world deals with that.
Because here's the thing, like this only comes into play if the next 2-3 seasons of Game of Thrones are a fiasco. And everybody's like, wow,
right.
This is a classic, started off well, got lost in the middle, and ended terribly.
I'm slightly afraid of that, given, you know, that the vision was George's, and now we don't have George in the mix as much.
Yeah.
You know?
But if that comes to pass,
take the meat out of the stew, and
then George, assuming he eventually releases, because there's this idea kicking around the fandom now that, like, what if the story gets out and it's done, and like maybe people don't like it, or maybe they're indifferent, or maybe they love it? Does George finish the series?
If they love it.
I mean, what's
I think he's got to. No matter what
happens.
As the
creator, having your work taken away and adapted before you get a chance to tell it yourself, like, the motivation to continue has got to be...
Right. Especially if he's just going to write the rest of the show into his books, right?
Yeah.
Like, if he's not going to change anything,
yeah,
it almost might seem like a waste of effort to write the books. I don't know. Just pay somebody to write down what they saw on screen.
Now, as a person who watched the first season or two and then later got into the books... I got to say that I didn't feel like the books, I mean, obviously the books are spoiled as far as their big points.
Sure.
But I was impressed by how much more depth and how much more complexity and how much the stuff with the prophecies and like the people theorizing about things. Like, there's a lot of stuff still to enjoy about the books, even if you've seen the series. So I'm afraid. Like, if George finishes it and it's good, I think I'll really enjoy reading the books. It's going to be a weird experience to have, like, the snake eat its tail here.
Yeah.
But I guess the only time I'm going to get upset is if the next couple seasons are bad, people don't like it, and then it's like, okay, well, what's George going to do now?
So it's a scary thing for me, because that's the only scenario in which I get upset, if the show sucks.
Yes. I think everybody would be upset. No one wants the show to suck for lots of reasons.
Right. And since I'm probably not going to read the books, I don't care so much about whether it's accurate to those or not. But... I will say I think they have an uphill battle coming into these last few seasons because, like I said on the preview cast, I think instinctively there's going to be a negative reaction from book readers to the show. They're just going to have this reflexive recoiling from something that isn't George R. R. Martin. And I worry that will color the conversation and maybe color the perception of the final few seasons. And I think if they're not excellent and people aren't just blown away by them,
yes,
there's a good chance that people will come away going either it was mediocre or it was bad and having a sour taste.
Well, especially since this whole cottage industry of the spoilers and the tinfoil and the theories have grown up, and you know, people say, I have my pet theory. Well, if your pet gets murdered, are you happy?
Like, and even you're still holding out hope, and you get angry, and you're like, yeah, well, George will write it into the books.
Yes.
Then you're like doubly angry at the show.
Like with the Stannis shit, people were so mad at what they perceived as betrayal of a character, but in the years since then, I've come to appreciate that I don't know how it'll happen in the books, but I do think that Shireen gets burnt, and Stannis is probably behind it. So like a lot of these, and so you're going to, where there's people have their pet theories, they're going to be disproved and they're not going to want to admit it. And they're going to say the double D's are ruining it. And
right.
And then, you know, you can't prove them right or wrong until the books come out. And when the hell is that going to happen? So
it's a dangerous game they're playing, but it's exciting in a weird way.
Yes.
Like, I just want to see the fallout from all this.
Sure. It is going
good or bad.
Yeah. Things could get intense here.
Right.
This season.
And if I were in the middle of it, I'd be shaking in my boots. But I'm not. I'm an outsider, just kind of watching the show, having fun.
But that's what we covered this a little bit in the special edition spoiler podcast or video, where it's like there's a scenario where both fan bases are pissed off.
Yeah,
like you know the book readers are pissed because their pet theories aren't coming to fruition, and the show readers are pissed because the show's not as good. It's like it's getting, you know, because we point out a bunch of different things that the show has had to do that might not, it's kind of like driving, four-wheeling over broken ground, you know, like they changed things about how the Hound died, and that's going to make it harder to believe that he could get you know, there's a situation where you could piss off both groups of fan bases, and I don't know what happens. But
it goes down as a big debacle, I think, and this kind of thing probably doesn't get done again for a long time.
Yeah.
Where the series isn't complete and they're just making shit up as they go along.
Yeah. Andy B says, I've been doing a rewatch of season 5 in preparation for season 6 and also listening to both the recap and spoiler podcasts of each episode. Holy shit, mainline and bald move. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm not a book reader, but since I'd already completed season 5 last year, I figured it'd be okay to listen through the spoiler cast. I love all your tinfoil theories and evidence used to support them. I also have some questions relating to theories and prophecies and also Martin's writing progress. is Martin as careful at crafting mysteries as we give him credit for. For many tinfoil theories, we look very, very closely at the specific wording used by Martin to try and extract the hidden meaning, i.e. Gravedigger, Cersei's prophecy, etc. Do you think Martin actually writes in the carefully worded clues for us to find, or are fans just too good at extracting theories from nothing, like theories based on language and numerology in the Bible? Is there maybe a Clash of Kings era theory later proven true that we can use as precedent? I wonder if the obsession fans have with digging through the complex language is one reason why Martin is behind schedule with The Winds of Winter. He has to write with extreme precision so that we don't jump to theories that he didn't intend. What do you think about this, Jim? Because my position is I'm not sure that George gives a shit about us jumping on theories he doesn't intend. In fact, I think he throws in red herrings because he's telling this, like, in real life, history doesn't have a narrative journey that is going on. It's only in hindsight that you see that, you know, like, look at World War II. So many different parties and so many things going on, but it's not like it was preordained that the Axis powers would fall apart and the Allies would win. And there's lots of, like, there's an assassination attempt on Hitler that doesn't go anywhere. You know, real life is like that. And I think in my best days, I think Martin is trying to emulate that, where there's all kinds of plots and then you get 360-degree insight on all of them, but they're not all going to go anywhere because that wouldn't be realistic.
Right.
And it also has a side effect of throwing people off the scent of things.
Sure.
What do you think?
Well, I don't know enough about the guy himself.
Yeah.
I don't really pay much attention to how he feels about, you know, the show and the theories and the writing that he does. But I can only imagine it's probably something that he thinks about. I mean, I don't know how much it influences him, but he's probably aware that people are digging through all these theories.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Okay. I mean, there's this whole thing, this archive on, I think it's Westeros.org, called So Spake Martin.
Okay.
Which is just nothing but a, like, scripture collection of chapter and verse of all the different con appearances and all the different emails and all the different stuff he said.
Comic-Con 4-7 says.
Yeah, exactly. So I know he's aware, because he also makes, like, we talked about yesterday, but can Danny be burnt? Like, he sometimes comments on the fans' commentary, like, no, you're fucking wrong, when they're completely off and left field.
So it does influence him a bit, obviously. Sure. I don't know. Like, it ultimately doesn't matter that much to me.
Yeah, I mean, to answer directly your question, I know that, like, the Red Wedding was heavily foreshadowed. And and once you know that the Red Wedding is a thing, it's obvious. I wasn't part of the fandom. I couldn't tell you that there was predictions made from a Game of Thrones and, a Clash of Swords and Storm of Swords and all that stuff that led into some of the stuff. I couldn't tell you, but I do know that I've seen the bones of that stuff that come to fruition in the book 2 and book 3. Maybe there's some fans out there that was part of that or have done the research. They could help us out with some concrete examples of predictions made.
But, right, and a lot of the time we talk, you know, in some of these other shows, like Breaking Bad, for instance, how Vince Gilligan strip mines the past, right? And I think that's a pretty good way to do it, right? You write these things that could be clues or might not be clues, who knows, and then you take bits and pieces of those and you craft them into some other plot point later.
Yeah. As far as why it's the reason for his delay, I think it's just really hard to get this big sprawling plot landed. Like,
one of the reasons
he said it took so long to take do feast and dance is because he had the situation where, well, fuck, Dany's in Essos and I need her to get to Westeros and I got this stuff and I need to happen and they're crossing the seas and, like, how do I bring all these plots together?
I would like to see his planning board.
And he thought that the worst was behind him, but apparently not, because, like, okay, now you've gotten all the characters where they need to be. Now what do they do to get to the end game?
Like, what must the process for breaking this story be like?
Breaking
the next Game of Thrones
book? He's famously
a
gardener rather than an architect. You know the difference?
Yeah, yeah. Gardener's like, just kind of plants the seeds and sees what happens.
They do what they do. And the architect's like, I need these pieces and these places. So,
but at some point, the gardener must become an architect if he's going to end a series.
He's got to get the garden weasel out. He's got to get the hoe. He's got to start tending to the crops.
Otherwise, the thing never ends.
You're right.
Like, if he wants a conclusion, he has to become at least partially an architect.
Yeah, Yeah, and I don't envy him his task, because not only that, no. he's got hundreds of thousands of people breathing down his neck.
Yeah.
So yeah, anyway...
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
James F. says, who do you think gets to King's Landings first, Dany or the White Walkers? And will Cersei be alive when they all get there?
Oh, I think Dany gets there first.
Okay.
Will Cersei be alive?
I don't see Cersei making it out of this story alive.
Yeah, she's I don't want her to. I hate her so much. You know, season five tried to make me feel a little sympathy, but honestly, she brought it on herself.
Mm-hmm.
So not much sympathy there.
Plus, there's super. Oh, I mean, she's got a prophetic death that's already been identified.
Right.
And there's a whole bunch of theories about, you know, what goes on. You know, who's the identity of who's going to eventually kill her and all that. So it's like if you got a prophecy that says you're gonna die after all your children are dead and all these things have come to pass, like, I feel like if she lives, it'd be an aberration.
Yeah. So I think you're right. I think she's done. And I think Dany is going to head over there first
before the White Walkers get there,
especially now that she's paired up with Tyrion. I think he's going to help that come about.
Yeah. The Game of Thrones is not the type of show that, to me anyway, the White Walkers are on the gates of King's Landing and she comes in like with a Apache gunship dragon. Yeah. Just, although that does occasionally happen. That's essentially the Battle of the Blackwater, right?
Right, which
Stannis
was spectacular.
Had it circular, and
I loved
then
it. Yeah.
Tywin and Laura come in and with Highgarden soldiers and they wipe out the... So they do...
Yep.
Maybe they do that sometimes.
Maybe.
Yeah, they do it twice in one series.
So the White Walkers are still up at Hardhome, yeah? In force? En masse?
That's the last we saw them.
Right. So
now,
as far
I don't
as we know...
just chill out there, but...
They're making their way down, but it's slow.
Because they don't have they're not on boats, yeah.
Right, and Hardhome is way up north.
It's
right?
pretty far up north, yep.
So they got a ways to travel before they get even to the wall.
On foot, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, and then it's a long slog to get to Winterfell and a longer slog to get to King's Landing. They've got a lot of ground to cover.
Plus, there's a lot of evidence in the books, anyway, that the wall has some kind of magical protection. It's not just a wall of ice.
Oh.
It's actually a wall of magic that prevents whites from crossing it.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Which there's a popular theory that it's a popular theory that there's also some prophecies about the walls falling, and there's this horn of Jorimund and this horn of winter that you can blow and perhaps make the walls fall, like very, very Jericho-ish.
Is that what he blew up at Hardhome? Was that horn?
No, but if you recall in the first or second season when they're at the Fist of the First Man, that this is where the Rangers were all like ready to take their last stand against the White Walkers.
Right. Yeah.
Jon Snow uncovers a cache of dragonglass weapons. Mm-hmm. And there's also a brief shot of a cool, ornate-looking horn in that stash as well, which is the book readers going, woo, you know. That's not been mentioned since, but that, and that could just be a wink to us, and that's really, because there's a lot, this dragon horn and horn of winter, this stuff all is like kind of up in the air about what it really is going to do. Like, it's kind of these kind of super weapons that some people say, well, we found it, and we tried it and it didn't work, and other people say, we found it, but it was a forgery, and other people said, we found it, but buried it, and other people say, we never found it. Like, there's all these different conflicting stories about it.
I like that.
Is Littlefinger in cahoots with the White Walkers? No, I don't
think so. Why would he want to be?
I don't think he believes in their existence. Maybe that's his downfall, that he's a man of reason and logic and plotting, and the fact that there's a supernatural evil force, you know, quotation marks around evil. He won't account for that in his plans.
Yeah. He has nothing to gain from joining forces with the White Walkers.
I wouldn't think.
Because they would just kill him.
I mean, that. But on the other hand, like, it's the, you know, fifth element syndrome. Like, why the hell does Zor join up with the ultimate evil force that's going to snuff out all life except for you?
Right. Right. It's stupid.
Like, is chocolate syrup running down your forehead that big of a draw?
It's a huge plot hole in that movie. Or you're just a maniac, and I don't think Littlefinger is a maniac.
He concludes by, can you please explain why my autocorrect keeps changing Cersei to Mercy? Seriously, has autocorrect even watched this show? Sometimes shit happens, man. You gotta train it. Like, I finally got my autocorrect to it knows about Daenerys, and it knows about Cersei.
Right.
All that stuff. Ephraim says, so I believe Arya is going to finish her training and fully become a faceless girl instead of dying as suggested in the podcast. Iron Bank could very well hire the Faceless Men to kill King Tommen, Cersei, or even Littlefinger, given that he was one of the people responsible to get the kingdom in a lot of debt.
Wait, but the in the podcast I said she was going to die and become a faceless man. Like, that's the process of becoming one of them.
That's true.
So I think I suggested both things.
Arya could conveniently be selected to be that assassin to do us the favor of killing Littlefinger and take the opportunity to cross names off her list. Valis Morghulis, bitches. What do you guys think?
Could Arya kill Littlefinger?
Well, do you think the Faceless Men, with their whole emphasis on the death of individuality and the no one stuff, do you think they would send Arya on a very personal mission to fulfill a contract?
Maybe a final test?
Like, to see if she will do it? See if she's all do about it. Doing it.
Like, no, see if she'll go do something else and like where they know Littlefinger will be in proximity.
Yeah.
And then she goes up there and sees him and has to pass the test like she didn't with Meryn Trant.
Yeah. On the other hand, Jaqen's original pitch to her is, you know, a girl has many names and I can teach you how to collect them all. Like, it's a if they come up with some kind of horse shit, oh, well, you're not allowed to assassinate people that you have a personal connection to. That's not honoring the guy. Like, I can see, I sometimes wonder if Arya's path is to take all she can, learn from the Faceless Men, and then ultimately betray them.
Maybe.
To go off on her, and that might cost her life.
I mean, that sword is still hanging around. Needle's still
Yeah, she buried it. Like, right. She's like, not, you can, there's, there, she is resisting the full transformation into no one. And I don't think, I don't see her being a faceless man in the organization. And I think there's going to be some kind of horseshit thing that causes her to like be disillusioned with it and to break up with them.
Okay.
You know, them trying to harsh, them blinding her for killing a guy that needs to be killing. That's step one. Who knows? What else we got here? Ryan wants to know if wildfire could be a weapon used against the White Walkers. I can't really find where this has been discussed. And interestingly enough, I don't think I've ever heard people mention the fact that wildfire, which is kind of described as synthetic dragon fire and, you know, super powerful napalm.
Huh, yeah.
Why? And Tyrion, he doesn't know how to make it, but he knows the guys who do, and he used it, you know, very memorably in a strategy before. Mm-hmm. I've never seen people talk about like how maybe you don't need dragons. Maybe the ingenuity of man working together could forestall the army. Because what does the White Walkers do? We know that their foot soldiers go up like, you know, wicker furniture.
Yep.
With lacquer paint.
Right.
So what do they do if you got catapults with wildfire?
Good question.
I don't know. So good, you should get on Reddit and see if...
Have they been stockpiling wildfire again?
Or I don't think so.
Is it still just depleted?
I don't think so. The idea, I guess, is that there'd be caches of it still that's left to be discovered. Like, that wasn't everything.
It wasn't?
I don't know.
I thought they made a big point of it was. Like, they needed to use it all.
But also the...
How long had they been stockpiling it? Do you remember?
Since the days of the Old King.
Well, fuck.
In the books.
That's a long time.
The other thing is the pyromancers in the books, and I believe the series too, made a big point of like, hey, our fire-making abilities are really going into high gear now. And they speculate because it's the return of, you know, it's the return of all this magic and the dragons and the Red Star and the same reason the Lord of Lights, again, whatever mystical powers the pyromancers use to make this shit are getting more and more effective.
Hmm.
So, I mean, that's in the books for a reason.
Right.
I mean, surely it's not just for Tyrion's little battle trick, right?
I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just foreshadowing Dragon's Fire coming in.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Could be thematic.
So Steve, his imagination was fired up by our talking about we see Jon Snow coming back around episode 3. That's something we just pull out of our ass.
Sure, yeah.
But it ignited his tinfoil imagination, and okay. He said the way he sees it, episode 1, the Red Woman Melisandre tries to bring back Jon Snow, but the Black Brothers shut that shit down.
Hmm.
Which makes perfect sense. The episode ends with Snow getting torched on the pyre with the brothers saying the legally binding and now his watch is over, which is a crucial... If you think that Jon Snow is going to take part in big politics in Westeros, he's got to die so he can get rid of his old, you know, honor
so he
bound...
So sit on the throne.
To not hold lands and titles and do all that stuff.
Yeah.
Episode 2 is going to be the flashback to the Tower of Joy, which is essentially the opening of the eyes of the show watchers to the fact that he's got some royal blood in him. Episode 3 is the Red Woman and or Bran, presumably through some Weirwood bullshit, tells Davos and others about the Tower of Joy situation. Snow emerges from the fire. Davos Seaworth becomes his assistant. They round up the northern troops and the leftover Stannis troops and fuck the Boltons up. Now,
all right.
Here's where there's a lot of hand-waving yada yada. Does Jon Snow emerge from the fire literally like Daenerys?
How would he be resurrected? So Melisandre fails in that they shut that shit down. And how does he come back?
That's the thing. Like,
she does her spooky shit while he's on fire. And
it's one of those things where she thought it didn't work, but it really did.
Right.
That's kind of a trope, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, how familiar are the Night's Watch brothers with what Melisandre could be capable of?
That's a good question. They've seen her burn people alive.
Okay.
But I don't, you know, they obviously don't know about the shadow baby stuff.
Right. So, like, maybe they're just like, Jon Snow's dead. We don't give a fuck what you do with his body. And they let Melisandre take it.
Well, see, because I feel like the Black Brothers killed Jon, but even the you know, Sir Guyliner, the one that's the most anti-Jon.
Is that not Alistair, right?
Yeah, Sir Alistair.
Alistair?
Okay. I think there's a measure of, like, respect and also sadness that they can't... Like it wasn't like a triumphant, Jon Snow, I'm finally putting you down, you fucking bastard. They all were pretty somber about it. I don't think they would just be like, fuck Jon Snow, do what... I think they would want to give him full, if nothing else, for the respect of the institution of Lord Commander, that they would want to do the full burial rites and honors due to someone of his stature.
Okay. Maybe so. But then I don't know how Jon comes back. Like, we've never seen Melisandre bring someone back from fire.
Yeah.
It's always her throwing someone into fire. And
so here's something from the books that I think maybe Sam had a throwaway line about it, that Jon Snow, it turns out, according to the chronology of the Black Brothers, he's the 998th Lord Commander.
Okay. Of what significance is that?
Well, because this is just something interesting. Because so presumably he dies, someone else has to be made Lord Commander, which would be the 999th. Something about the 1,000th Lord Commander is getting. That's a nice round special number.
Okay.
No one, I mean, there, I don't, there's not a lot of like what this all means.
Are you suggesting that John comes back and becomes the thousandth as well?
Maybe.
So
or
that
maybe Sam is, and he's like, Sam is Azor Ahai. I don't know. I'm just saying that, like, it's not for nothing that they make a big point out of the fact that he's 998. They'll be in, we're probably going to see the 1,000th Lord Commander, and what of what significance is that?
Right. I don't know that it would be John, because wouldn't he have to take the vows again? And
sure,
wouldn't that
of course
preclude him from getting on the throne and owning lands and like all the kind of stuff we've talked about wanting to see or other theories? So, I mean...
But there could, it's also could be bound up with, like, there's a couple leading theories about how the reason the White Walkers are invading is because there was an ancient pact between man and the White Walkers where, you know, they're going to put up the wall and ne'er the twain shall meet.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow, because it's been thousands and thousands of years and man has forgotten, they're not keeping up some end of their bargain. So, and also that the Night's Watch has become kind of a perversion of its original purpose, and that a lot of these rules and restrictions are not necessary, that maybe there'll be a renewal of the Night's Watch, or maybe the Night's Watch will no longer need to be in force after the whole Dream of Spring happens, or maybe the Thousandth Lord Commander will have, you know, some kind of, reforms that they put in place. Like I'm just putting that because there's something. I do think there's something to the Thousandth Lord Commander that's special. I don't know what it is.
Who becomes Lord Commander now?
It's got to be Alistair, right?
Just gonna pose it. Yeah, I can't imagine that he doesn't.
Yeah.
move back up.
Yeah, he was acting Lord Commander.
Right. I was gonna say I thought he was, but
until they had the election.
Sure, because what's his nuts died up in the
the old bear
up north. Yeah.
So I don't know. That's another thing I wanted to drop down. So he has some defense of this. Steve does for his 3-episode arc.
Okay.
He says, how unsatisfying is the... He goes, why he thinks this is going to go down. He goes, how unsatisfying would it be for the Red Woman to just say some magic words
bring
and
him
have
back.
Him come back? Although that's kind of what happened with Thoros of Myr.
Right.
He said, I was praying. I was just saying my prayers. I didn't even intend to bring him back to life, but the Lord moves in his mysterious ways. Also, why would the Watch just not kill him again? The magic works are known and not epic enough to get the Watch to let him go. It's like,
he doesn't become immortal.
Yeah, it'd be zombies of Jon Snow, kill it with fire.
Yeah, but it also makes me wonder, like, if Catelyn comes back as that through the same magical process, how the fuck does she just not die instantly with her bloated-ass corpse? Like, there must be some kind of sustaining magic here, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like, well, I started your heart again, and now if your body can handle it, you'll be alive.
Which, that's the thing, like, that's why he thinks that he has to be burned, because emerging from the flames would be, you know, that would signify... And also, he's not a White Walker, or he's not a white, because he would be, you know, that's not something they can do.
What if he just perpetually burns?
He's
on fire.
It's not the flaming sword that's the Lightbringer, it's the man who's holding the swords on fire.
Yeah.
And just screaming all the time.
That would be amazing for the rest of the series.
He's
3 seasons
fire.
Of Jon Snow.
Sure.
On fire. The last shot
he's
is him sitting
torch.
On the Iron Throne on fire, screaming. What kind of hell is that? Perpetually
the Iron
the
Throne
king.
Is glowing cherry red. It's a song of ice and fire. You had your ice, Jon Snow. Now you get your fire.
Yep.
For
the rest of time.
So his final bullet point is, if you get saved by the Lord of Light, one would think you'd become a devotee of the Lord of Light. That has plot implications.
All right, yeah.
Targaryen lore, fire lore gives him a free hand. I don't know what he means by that last part, but true. If he becomes, like, you know, that's another way he could become the Song of Ice and Fire, because he holds to the old gods, representing the ice and all that.
But let me ask you this. What if he wargs into Ghost,
okay.
which... Is his old god shit, right?
Immediately burst into flames.
No. It's,
got
it's
a flaming
his,
dog, sure.
The stink. Ooh, the stink alone. No, he wargs into Ghost using his old god powers, right?
Uh-huh.
His Stark
he's warging.
Shit. And then Melisandre resurrects his body and he wargs back into that. Which god does he serve?
Well, because
clearly the Lord of Light has rezzed his body.
Yeah.
His mind was transferred through the old god powers.
Yeah. That brings me back to the faceless man idea, that there's only one true god who they ascribed as death.
Okay.
There could be something that
Right.
You know, like,
they're
again,
all praying to the same god accidentally.
This is one universal mystical force.
Uh-huh.
It's got the light side and the dark side. Stop me if you've heard this before. But there's, like, maybe John will actually religiously unify the people, too.
Okay.
That he's, like, this Azor Ahai is, like, this is literally a Christ-like figure.
Yeah.
You know, one thing Christ did is he put away the old law covenant and gave us Christianity, so.
Got to stomp out the sparrows for that to happen.
Well, and they do need stomping, Jim.
They
I think
need
we can all
stomping
agree.
Like you wouldn't believe. Oh, they need stomping.
So that's the preview spoiler podcast. We went an hour and 15, which scares me for what we're going to be doing in the middle of the season. But, you know,
well, you had a lot of catching up to do for these theories.
There's still some coming your way, brother.
God, I'm already so confused. This has been just an avalanche of information.
Yeah. Yeah.
That I have no reference point for either.
You feel like Neo?
I do.
You spent 3 hours learning Kung Fu.
I know
Fu.
Game of Thrones.
Show me. On this map, literally, right now, show me.
Where is the castle black?
Point out the quiet aisle.
Yeah. Oh, I can do that. I can actually do that
You think
now.
You could?
Yeah. It's in some little inlet riverland on the eastern coast of Westeros, yeah?
Yes. There's only one of those in all the map.
Well, I got a rough shape in my head.
No, I don't envy you, because I went through this, but I also did it over the course of reading 5 books.
Right.
Like the better, like a you know, 3 to 4 month period. So your brain case is definitely expanding.
Yeah, bear with me. I'm sure I'll forget half this shit.
Well, and also bear with
episode.
Me, because, you know, it seems like at the beginning of every season, I get a lot of hate mail from new listeners making fun of me not being able to pronounce names and get names wrong.
Sure.
That's just,
whatever.
I got to round into mid-season shape, man. Like, it takes a while. I don't do a year-round Game of Thrones podcast, and one of the consequences of that is it's not always as fresh in my mind. But I feel like I have a command of most of the facts, and I will get names are just a problem for me, man.
They have been.
I have a hard time pronouncing them. I have a hard time getting them straight. That's
and
not
this
a Game of Thrones thing.
And it's not – Game of Thrones doesn't help that problem for you.
Yeah.
With the similarity of places and people. And
there are many podcasts that get the details meticulously right that you may prefer if it's you're a stickler for that. Because God knows there's like 50 Game of Thrones podcasts.
50 more spring up every year.
If you made it
to
the end –
like goddamn weeds.
If you made it to the end, I appreciate you giving us a chance or returning. It's nice to see you again. I'm excited. You know, just a quick word on the tinfoil. I only have like one or two theories that I could deploy at this point. And I don't really feel comfortable. Like one of them, especially is a new that's I'm kind of waiting to see whether it gets support or not. That just came out on Reddit like 3-4 weeks ago that I like. But again, it's like liking a theory is one part. You got to actually have support for it and let people kick it around and see what kind of stuff can be proven or disproven on it. This is going to be this is the year where we're actually looking the other way. We're looking for show stuff to start revisiting these theories and proving them wrong or proving them right. So I think that's what the spoiler section is going to be. You know, what pieces of details have been now confirmed or denied, and maybe that will spin some other theories by proving some wrong or proving some right. I don't know. But it's not going to be a lot of tinfoil, I don't think, this year.
I think I'll probably feel a lot more prepared for these podcasts because, like, in years past, I haven't been able to look at literally anything about this show because spoilers are everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so hard to avoid them. And I was unspoiled. Now that I can go and indulge in spoilers and there's nothing really too crazy that's going to ruin my enjoyment, I can start reading stuff and feeling like, okay, I'm getting a handle on places and people and things in the universe a lot better from week to week. So I'm hoping that this will actually improve the standard, you know, Tuesday podcast that we're doing as well.
Yeah. But it is, unfortunately, the death of the mildly interesting, I think.
Right.
it's had a nice long 5-season run. And, you know, if you want to blame anyone for it, blame George Martin. Because the books had come out, I've been happy to. I mean, that's what I was saying. I'm like, please, George, for Christmas, can you get me The Winds of Winter with 4 months of time to read them and speculate on them? And he didn't keep his end of the bargain. So here's where we're at.
We need a bumper sticker that has like a tombstone with mildly interesting on it.
Yeah.
R.I.P. mildly interesting.
Like from the date of the first podcast to now. That'd be that. Yeah, it's actually would not be a bad merch idea.
Okay.
but no, I even if I didn't give a shit about Game of Thrones, I think I'd be interested in it just from the fact that this is kind of unprecedented. Someone mentioned that like they actually did this with kind of with Full Metal Alchemist.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, that the show got ahead of the manga, and then the manga finished, and then the show came back and did an alternate finish, and then there's so it's not unprecedented, but you know,
in my experience,
very
it
often,
is.
And nothing at this high profile prestige level.
Yeah, so. And I'm not familiar with Full Metal Alchemist, so I don't know how that turned out. But
right.
So in my experience, this is unique and interesting and exciting.
Yeah,
in some ways.
So there you go. It's going to be epic and different in a lot of different ways, and that might not be. And hopefully, the show will continue to be good. I actually kind of think that maybe the show might get better because the fact that it's been kind of dodgy the last season or two might be them not wanting to commit to things to see what George does now, or they're like, well, we got the outline, so fuck it, we're going to go.
Right.
I think they are natural storytellers. And they got a knack for bringing these things to satisfying conclusions. And then the other theory is, well, they've been cribbing from some of the best works of fantasy, and now they got nothing to crib from. So buckle up. If you like the bad Poussey, then more of that.
And Grey Worm relationships.
Yep. With his fellow sister slave, whatever. So we'll see. If you got some feedback for us, as always, GameOfThrones@baldmove.com, or you can get on the forums. For each episode, we're going to have a spoiler thread and a non-spoiler thread. Please keep it separated. Again, there'll be less and less. I don't know. Like, maybe in episode 6, I just like, fuck it. There's going to be one thread.
Okay.
Because someone was outraged with me on Facebook that I posted the picture of Blind Arya holding a stick.
Why? We know she's blind. Hold a stick. She has two hands.
She holds a stick at some point in daylight. But there's some people that are really fucking traumatized by spoilers with this show in particular. Because I gotta say,
sure,
not all the book readers have been nicey nice about not gleefully spoiling. Show watchers. So we don't do that here. But I could see. I could foresee a point where it's like there's no point in doing separate show and book threads. Well, we'll see. GameOfThrones@baldmove.com, forums@baldmove.com. We will see you Sunday night at 10 p.m. Eastern. We're going to record the instant podcast. If you're a Club Bald Move member, you can watch us, the video feed, so you can get it instantly. It'll be out 20-30 minutes later, as fast as we can edit it and post it out. And then, of course, Tuesday we'll have the full coverage, and next Friday we'll have another spoiler edition. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Have a great weekend. You.